And welcome to Solutions. This is your heavenly host, Dr. Mark Pitstick. Solutions providing soul perspectives for a new millennium. This is a show that assumes we are souls. There's much, much proof and evidence out there that we are souls. And given that, how shall we live? How does that affect every area of our life? Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove, he has a PhD in parapsychology from University of California, Berkeley. He is the radio host of the show Virtual You, which is on Wisdom Radio, and is a TV host of the show Thinking Aloud, which is on National Public TV. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. He has written the book The Roots of Consciousness, which is a huge, very interesting book. I saw Dr. Mishlove last year at the Conference on Science and Consciousness in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He was one of the key speakers there, and I think one of the more frequent presenters, and loved his material, and we're glad to have you on the show. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I know you cover a lot of bases in your work. You're very eclectic, and as we mentioned, communicating earlier on, tonight we want to focus, though, on practical spirituality, kind of the spirituality portion of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, if you would tell the people just a little more about yourself, please.
Well, I like to think I'm a person who embodies practical spirituality. I have many interests. I organize, for example, a nonprofit group called the Intuition Network. It's dedicated to the purpose of creating a world in which all people are encouraged to listen to their inner intuitive voice. I'm involved in business interests, and it seems to me that the path of spirituality or mysticism isn't complete until it involves some activity, some action in the world.
Well, I don't know where to start. First of all, I heard three of your talks, and you just covered so much information, and I've been reviewing your website, which, by the way, for listeners, is www.mishlove.com, and that's M-I-S-H-L-O-V-E. And so I certainly recommend you check out that website and learn much more about Dr. Mishlove's seminars, the conferences he'll be speaking at, his books and TV and radio shows. First of all, I guess I have a question about the terms consciousness, soul, and spirit. How would you define those? Are they interchangeable loosely?
Well, in everyday language, they're pretty interchangeable to my way of thinking. And when you get into philosophical discussions, there are many nuances. The soul, for example, to me refers mostly to the emotional body, the longings that we feel, especially our longing for union, which in a way is what the spirit has already achieved. The spirit is one with everything. The soul is that part of us that is longing for that union, and the ego or normal mind sometimes feels completely separated from that oneness. We go about our lives imagining ourselves to be separate and distinct from everything else in the universe.
And then consciousness, how would you fit that term with the others?
Consciousness is one of the most mysterious things of all. Consciousness is our subjective experience, our awareness of things. But we don't know its outer boundaries. I like to think, frankly, that everything is conscious, every molecule, every grain of sand.
Well, I'd certainly agree with that. Now, Dr. Mishlove has run in some serious academic circles, and of course at the conference last year, speaker after speaker saying that from their viewpoint as a physicist, as a mathematician, consciousness, and then if you want to stretch his term, soul and spirit, is really the truest description of reality at its core. Could you talk about a bit about that, please?
Well, that relates to the ancient myths about the origin of the universe. In the beginning was the spirit, and the beginning was God, and the beginning was just this oneness, and the oneness was conscious, and the oneness, for a variety of reasons and different myths, desired to create a universe. And so the sense is that matter and energy, time and space, all evolved out of consciousness. And today, philosophers We find ourselves in these physical bodies, and the conventional scientific view is that consciousness is sort of a product of the brain. But there's some very serious scientific and philosophical problems with that view, which is known technically as epiphenomenalism. That is, somehow consciousness emerges from something that is non-conscious, something that is purely physical. It really satisfy anybody, philosophically speaking, although it is, the popular view amongst modern academics. It's seriously flawed. And so you have leading-edge thinkers in biology and neurophysiology and in physics all saying, maybe consciousness is something elemental. Maybe it's just as fundamental as space and time. Or maybe it's even more fundamental.
Yes. That was a key for me at the conference, hearing Peter Russell, who is the protege of Stephen Hawking when Hawking developed Lou Gehrig's disease, who said that of light, energy, matter, only light is absolutely real. And we were talking before the break about the scientific, the academic viewpoint that spirituality, consciousness, is perhaps the truest description of reality, much like great spiritual teachers have taught us over the years. Jeffrey, could you expand upon that some of the prominent scientific viewpoints on that?
Well, for example, Sir Wilder Penfield, who is the great Canadian neurophysiologist, if you travel to Montreal, you'll see there's a Wilder Penfield street named after him, right there in McGill University, which is the big academic center there. And he conducted hundreds of operations mapping the brain and also mapping the functions of the different hemispheres in people who had had epileptics, where they would cut the corpus callosum in order to cure the epilepsy, but it meant that the two hemispheres functioned separately. He's considered one of the greatest neurophysiologists of our era, and he wrote a book in which he said, after spending a whole lifetime considering the human brain, he had come to the conclusion that consciousness is not produced by the brain, but you might say that the brain acts as a receiver of consciousness. Consciousness exists somehow in the universe, and it massages the brain. Sir John Eccles, a Nobel Prize-winning Nobel laureate in neurophysiology, also wrote a book on consciousness in the brain, and he drew much the same conclusion. That point of view in philosophy is known as dualism, and it suggests that consciousness and matter are sort of equal principles and independent of each other.
Excellent. Well, this is one of my, a lot of what I do is teach about the proofs of the afterlife, the truths, the proofs of the reality of spirit. And this is one of the 12 categories, which is the laws of physics and chemistry, that from a physicist's viewpoint, from a scientific viewpoint, that the truest nature of reality is light, energy, that we are largely made up of space. As Buckminster Fuller said, 99% of reality is intangible to our five senses. Yet for some reason, this information hasn't gotten out to the lay public, perhaps because of the semantics and language, and I think it's important that people like yourself and I help share this information. It's really mind-boggling and earth-changing.
Well, I think it's also when you see reality through your eyes, it appears as if you're looking at solid objects. And when you touch objects with your hands, they feel pretty solid. It's not as if you can push your hand through a door or through the wall. And when you walk in your building, the floor holds you up. So we're under the impression that this physical world is pretty solid if we just rely on the information of our five senses. But when we begin to contemplate what we know in physics using all sorts of technological instrumentation, and what we know through inner contemplation of our own inner senses, our intuition through consciousness, then we understand that the world of the senses is not the whole picture.
Have you seen enough evidence yourself to personally convince you of the reality of the unseen world?
Oh, yes.
There's more to life than meets the eye.
Enormous evidence. And in fact, every single physicist will tell you that the unseen world includes quarks, it includes electrons and photons and protons and neutrons. The bedrock of physics consists of things that cannot be seen.
Mm-hmm. And one of the proofs that I look for is a life transformative aspect. In other words, with near-death experiences, for example, people who have a true one, one of the validation aspects is it transforms their life quickly and consistently for the rest of their life. Have you experienced something like that yourself? This is a personal epiphany when you realize the evidence.
I have never had a near-death experience, thankfully. But I've interviewed many people who have, and it is a life-transforming experience, but often a difficult transformation. I interviewed Betty Eady, who wrote the book Embraced by the Light, and it took her nearly 20 years to work through the profound spiritual and psychological changes to bring her to a point where she could speak publicly about it and write about it. It's not always an easy thing.
Sure. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back, and I'll ask you about to share the history of psychic research, how there's really nothing new about new thought. It goes back to antiquity, and there's been much research in this area. We'll be right back with Solutions. Welcome back to Solutions, answering those age-old questions. Who are we? Why are we here? What happens after we die? And once we know we are souls, how does that affect every aspect of our lives? How shall we live? And helping us look at those important questions tonight is Jeffrey Mishlove. Jeffrey, before the break, we asked about asked you to share some of the history of paranormal research, some of the antiquity, and that there's really nothing new about New Age or New Thought ideas.
Well, that's a lot right there, because New Age and New Thought ideas are a little bit separate from paranormal research. The scientific research into extrasensory perception and life after death and reincarnation, psychokinesis and telepathy really began about 150 years ago, in the middle of the 19th century. Some of the leading scientists of that era were involved. People like William James, who was America's greatest psychologist and America's first psychologist, an enormous intellect, a giant of a thinker.
Yes.
And many people of his stature were involved in the field. There are now thousands of published experimental studies and case studies in this field documenting the existence of these powers of the human mind and exploring related areas like survival after death. Now, the question, though, of the New Thought movement, positive thinking, how far back does that go? Well, you can trace that back to ancient philosophy.
Sure.
That goes back much farther than scientific research into the paranormal.
I know at the conference you documented how much research was being done, especially in Europe, in the late 19th century. And is this one of these things that has cycled through time, comes into more general awareness, and then not?
Well, we live in a very unusual age. The modern Western world is almost unique in all of world history in terms of its denial of the spiritual, the paranormal side of life. And frankly, even that's pretty much limited to maybe a third or less of our present population. But they happen to be people that sociologists would call modernists. And they're very often in control of the scientific and academic establishment. But frankly, we all know there's a big reaction against modernism. It's led to pollution. It's led to a sense of alienation. It doesn't necessarily satisfy human values, the need for connection and belonging and community. It's why many people seem to want to go back to the old-time religion, and you have a resurgence of religious traditionalism, and then you also have a resurgence. I think the largest group in our population now are what sociologist Paul Ray calls the transmodern cultural creatives, people who are looking towards the future, and they are oriented towards a new universal spirituality.
Welcome back to Solutions with Dr. Mark Pitstick, your heavenly host, the Johnny Appleseed of spiritual enlightenment, here to remind each one of us that we are shining stars. We really are soul spirits, and there's lots of scientific proof about that, which we're speaking about tonight with our guest, Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Remember, his website is www.mishlove.com. That's M-A-S-H-L-O-V-E. We were speaking before, Jeffrey, about some of the most impressive research you're aware of about paranormal psychic, that there is more to life than meets the eye.
Well, I think one of the lines of research that is especially fascinating is the work on reincarnation that was done by Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia, Department of Psychiatry, as well as many other researchers. Dr. Stevenson has been engaged in this work for about 40 years now. He has collected thousands of individual case studies, and typically these cases are of young children who begin to tell their parents that they remember their past lives. They may be 5, 6, 7, 8, even younger. And if in the best of these cases, the parents notify researchers before much has been done, and the researchers will collect a lot of information from these children. It's often a lifetime in another village somewhere, and then they are able to verify whether the information provided by the children is accurate. And in a large number of cases, there's been a great deal of accurate information provided by the children. And what's particularly fascinating is that often these children have birthmarks that are associated with the wounds, particularly the death wounds, of the people whose lives they remember having been before.
Yes, thanks for bringing that research up. That is amazing, and again, something that everyone should know about it, because really the proof is there. The research has been done. It's just a matter of disseminating the information. As you mentioned earlier, though, there is some resistance to that, and we explored at one of your talks at the conference last year a topic which is apropos here, and that is, why don't more people want to develop their paranormal abilities or admit they're there? Or as Nelson Mandela was speaking about, why is our greatest fear to realize our brilliance? Would you share some of your insights on that, please?
I had the opportunity on one occasion to interview Arthur C. Clarke, the great science fiction writer, about this. I asked him, "Mr. Clarke, do you believe in ESP? And he said, "No, I do not, because I don't want anybody to read my mind." And I think that's one of the fundamental fears that we have. You know, Sigmund Freud pointed out, we don't even want to know what's in our own mind. And if we're not willing to look at the contents of our unconscious mind, how frightening it must be for us to have other people see those things. And that's the basis of civilization. And I think, you know, it's a very healthy movement that's taking place now, where more and more of the unconscious is becoming conscious. People are getting more comfortable with the contents of their own minds. And I think as a result of that, we'll become more and more comfortable accepting and owning our own psychic and spiritual capacities.
Mm-hmm. How much of this fear do you think is attributable to the early teachings that Mavis had that connected psychic phenomena, the supernatural, paranormal, with the occult, the devil?
Well, that's part of it. But we also think of our own natural urges, our sexual urges as being diabolic, and our aggressive urges as being diabolic. So we go through life, you know, as civilized people, pretending that we don't have these urges, and it creates a split. And in a way, you might say that there's something schizophrenic about civilization in general. We pride ourselves on these high values, and then we seem to have recurring war and conflict, and we really need to resolve these issues on every level.
And so with an emphasis on practical spirituality and with the name of the show, Soulutions, what do you recommend as some practical steps people can take to accept their various parts of themselves?
Well, of course, everybody is going to do something different. What I encourage people to do are to get together in small groups with a group of friends and just talk about it. Share your inner being. Share your intuitions. Share your dreams. Talk about your meditations or your spiritual practices. And you'll find that everybody you know is something of an expert. And many times it's everybody is involved in a spiritual search, but we're afraid sometimes to talk about it. And just to have a little social support group can make an enormous amount of difference.
Good. And I think the role for many of us is to be like a shaman, and that is walking with one foot in each world, the physical world as well as the spiritual world. It's a tricky walk, and it takes balance, but it's possible, and I think that's a calling for many of us now in the West.
And not only is it a calling, but it's a reality. We're all in two worlds anyway. We might as well own up to it.
Yes. Let's get a little more far out here for a moment. There's some different theories around about why some of this, well, first, that the human species was originally supposed to have or designed to have powers of telepathy and ESP and so on, and then look at why some people have those powers, others don't. And I've heard theories like genetic engineering by malevolent ETs, that are part of our DNA is inactivated. What's your view on this?
Well, I know there are many interesting theories about human origins, and certainly the possibility is very real that the human species was genetically engineered, maybe by an advanced race of extraterrestrials who came here hundreds of thousands of years ago and mixed their own genes with the genes of some of the local primates on the planet at that time. I don't think we can rule that out. It sounds like a reasonable hypothesis. But in terms of whether they did that in order to reduce our psychic functioning, I couldn't say. You know, if such a thing did happen, as is hypothesized, for example, by Zechariah Sitchin,
yes,
it's almost impossible for me to guess what the motives would have been. The fact is that we're here now, and we have inherited many, many myths, Atlantis and Lemuria and the extraterrestrial myths and the many myths of other cultures about our relationship with a larger world, with hyperspace creatures or with beings from other planets. And I think it's incumbent upon us to try and sort it all out and sift through these different myths to arrive at a more satisfactory answer than is being offered us in contemporary academic thinking. You know, there are plenty of problems still with Darwin's theory of evolution. That one does not need to be a creationist in order to acknowledge that the picture of human origins is still very incomplete.
Well, I told folks in the beginning of the show that you are very eclectic, but I'm learning tonight just how eclectic you are. You've really covered a lot of bases, because I know you hang with some really solid academic figures, scientists, and so on, and to take into account some of these others, for example, William Bromley and Zechariah Sitchin, I'm impressed at your openness. We've got a break coming up, and for the last spot, I'll ask you to share some about Intuition Network. I've been kind of saving that for the last, so stay tuned with us. We're interviewing tonight Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Again, his website is www.mishlove.com, M-I-S-H-L-O-V-E, the best way to access information about all his various outreaches. And also, I want to pass on that we were talking about Ian Stevenson's research earlier. His work is very erudite. His latest book, Reincarnation and Biology, 2,200 pages, not very accessible to the average person. But there's an excellent book out by Carol Bowman called Children's Past Lives, which has a long chapter on Dr. Stevenson's research and does a very good job of reviewing that. Jeffrey, before the break, we were mentioning you're the director of Intuition Network. Would you tell folks about that, please?
Well, one of the projects that we sponsor is called our Sacred Sites Mystery School, and we will be taking people to Egypt in about a month to visit the Great Pyramid at the spring equinox. It's our belief that these pyramids and the other temples and tombs were used for purposes of spiritual awakening, and we go there with many teachers of intuition and use the occasion of being at a sacred site at a special time of the year as an opportunity to look more deeply within ourselves. And it seems as if the gifts of the spirit are much more easily accessible in those places and at those times. So we go to Egypt, we go to Machu Picchu. We also sponsor many discussion groups around the country, as I mentioned earlier, small groups where people come together just to support each other in developing their inner intuitive and spiritual capacities.
Beautiful. I loved on your website the quote about the Intuition Network, organization dedicated to helping create a world in which all people are encouraged to cultivate their inner intuitive resources. Now, what an important outreach that is. I was also impressed that you have Kevin Ryerson as your board of directors.
Yes, and Kevin will be coming with us to Egypt and to Machu Picchu. He's really the spearhead behind our Sacred Sites program. And what he is able to do, he's a trance medium known for his work with Shirley MacLaine. And when we're in the pyramids in Egypt, for example, he will bring forth the ancestral intelligence that speaks through him of an ancient Egyptian priest who can explain to us and share with us firsthand how these initiation chambers were originally used.
Well, our time is closing, but I thank you so much for joining us. What a beautiful example of mixing the academic, the scientific, with the spiritual. Openness to some things that sound far out but may very well be true. You know, often the truth is 180 degrees from what we were brought up believing. And again, you can learn about his work with his website, www.mishlove.com. Remember that name, Jeffrey Mishlove. You'll hear much more about him in the future.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
This recording is copyrighted by Dr. Mark Pitstick. Any reproduction or duplication of this recording is strictly prohibited. For more information about Dr. Pitstick's books, CDs, or workshops, or to sign up for his free email newsletter, visit his interactive website at www.soulproof.com, or you can write him at Box 1604, Chillicothe, Ohio. That's Chillicothe, Ohio, zip 45601. Office phone is 740-775-2189, and the fax is 740-774-4478. Thanks very much for listening. This is the end of this recording.